Welcome back to Unkempt Thoughts. Last time, I offended a lot of my rationally thinking friends, so I thought this time I'd speak about the irrational. I hope you enjoy. We have to have a way to deal with things that we don't understand. Anything that I've already experienced, I can say that I understand. If I've seen red things, and round things, and tasty things, and shiny things, then when I see an apple, I can tell you that I understand it. Because I can compare it in one aspect to many other things that I've seen in the past. I understand its redness, because I've seen that before. I understand its roundness, because I've seen that before. I understand its tastiness, because I've experienced that before. And that's how I interact with it. The first time you see something, you don't understand it. In fact, we don't really even know how many pieces to take something apart into until we see each of those facets in another place and we can compare it to the original. I mean, just experiencing an apple, there are so many things about it, I can't possibly notice them all. Yes, I experience its redness and its roundness and its tastiness and its shininess the very first time I see an apple, but I may not be able to break it down into its component parts until I've seen each one of those individually and can compare them. When I think about something logically and try and understand it, so I'm trying to break it down into its abstractions. I know that sounds a little self-contradictory, but I mean like this. When I see a number of red objects and a number of round objects and a number of shiny objects, I can make abstractions. I can take real things and draw patterns between them. Oh, all of these things are similar in that they are all red. All of these things are similar in that they are shiny. But red and shiny are not real things. Red and shiny are abstractions. They only exist in our thought, as far as we know. There can be red things and shiny things, but red and shiny, those are just thoughts. So, we need to have a way to deal with things that we don't yet understand. Because we haven't yet experienced enough to take apart all the things that we encounter. So, we really have two kinds of interactions with our world. Some things we just experience. We connect to them without breaking them down. And some things, if we recognize them enough, and we've seen enough similar things, we take them, we break them into their component parts, and we understand them. I want to explore a little bit this kind of dealing with things, which is above logic, so to speak, which we can do before we understand something logically. Now, babies for sure, and children to a large extent, do this much more. They try and get intuitive grasps of things, because they don't yet have the categories to put them into, and they don't yet have the words to describe them. As we get older, we do this less often, but it still plays a major part in our thinking. Anyone who's involved in any sort of creative endeavor, I'm sure, is familiar with the experience of having an idea, but not being able to describe it. A kind of inspiration that they know contains all of the material, the thought material, to make a fully formed idea. But they haven't asked it nearly enough questions to have something real yet. And then, as they start bouncing it off of parameters in their head, it becomes fully formed. You know, I have an idea. I'm going to become the world's greatest ice cream superstar. That's the inspiration. But I have this inspiration. I don't yet know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to follow. I don't know how it's going to become real. But I start bouncing it off of things that I know about. Okay, I know about economics and that there's a monetary system that we use. So I said, well, how will this inspiration that I had work with the fact that things take money to run? And I'll have this problem and I'll think about it. And somewhere between the two, between the inspiration and this logical question, a limb of my thought baby will be formed. I'll think, well, what if I became an ice cream superstar by making an ice cream business which was economically feasible? And then I'll think, but I know that for things to be economically feasible, they need to have a certain draw to customers. So how does my inspiration of being an ice cream king present itself in a way that's attractive to customers? It's like, well, I could turn that inspiration into some idea. Well, I've bounced it off this thought court, and maybe if I use this marketing gimmick or use this public relations device. What we're talking about is two modes of thought. One mode of thought that's intuitive, where I grasp a whole concept, or at least the root of a concept, but I don't know its parts and I don't know its details. And one mode of thought where I rationally examine something and attempt to see its definite borders. A few hundred years ago, mankind went through a horrendous upheaval called the Enlightenment, which is a funny term because it was really an endarkenment. I'm sure all of my history buff friends will get slightly nauseous as I continue speaking, because obviously I don't have much of an education in the intricacies of world affairs for the last 400 years. But my understanding is something like the following. At a certain point, we collectively, as humans, decided that we weren't going to take anything for granted, and that we would determine truth only by the body of knowledge which we had accumulated using the empirical method. And if things had not been proven, and they did not have rational backing, we would not accept them as part of our body of human knowledge. And obviously, this was a huge leap in some ways for humans, because we left behind a lot of preconceived philosophies and started to build one brick at a time what we know today as the colossal corpus of scientific knowledge. It was a painful process because we started out knowing almost nothing. But the more we built, the more we could make more connections, the more we could break things apart and define them clearly, the more we could abstract and understand the theoretical underpinnings of the ideas we were speaking about. And for humans, it was indeed a tremendous enlightenment. The light of human intellect has begun to shine very brightly. However, I think sometimes we don't understand what we lost. Before that point, there were very wise people. Certainly no less so than the smartest people that we have today. I mean, there's some indication that people's IQ is going up, but I don't know. Need to investigate it. There certainly were great thinkers. The main difference was the way they related to things. They had a tremendous understanding of things with this intuitive thinking, with this kind of thinking that we use before we understand things enough to break them down into pieces. Every phenomena that they observed, they had an intuitive grasp of. Now, it wasn't fully formed and clearly defined like we have in textbooks. But I think it was true in a very deep sense. Just as my knowledge of a new creative project that I'm about to start is true, even before I've fleshed out all the details. When we decided to shift our mode of thought and start building truth based on things that we had proven or abstracted rationally, we made the decision to forget and ignore and forget all of our intuitive knowledge of the universe. What we knew about the sun and its significance, what we knew about the earth and its significance, what we knew about humans and their patterns and their meanings. We forgot that all in favor of building a new system from the ground up. It was really an endarkenment. We forgot everything we knew. And then a small light began to shine, the light of the human rational mind. There is, though, something interesting that happens when we take things apart with our brains. Let's go back to the example of an apple. When a child interacts with an apple, that's all it is. It's an apple. You ask him to describe it, he doesn't have much to say about it. But boy, is it an apple. Then, when he grows and begins to break it apart with his mind by comparing it to other things, he learns the facets of it. As we said, it's red, it's round, it's shiny, it's tasty. Now, the apple itself is so full of information that as long as we've studied it, and humans have been studying them for as long as we can remember, and are still working on it, we still don't fully understand it. It's full of information. But here's what can happen when the undeveloped, or even the highly developed, intellect loses its intuitive understanding of apple. and transitions into a rational understanding of Apple. I start to think about the apple. I have red, I have tasty, I have round, I have shiny. And then in my mind, the idea of apple is comprised of those four attributes. An apple is these four things. And if I could make something that was round, shiny, red, and tasty, it would be an apple. The problem is when we try and replicate things based on the parts of them that we understand, we miss the parts of them that we don't understand. For example, I could make something round, red, shiny, and tasty, but it wouldn't be nutritious. There was another component, another abstraction to the original idea that I totally missed. But it could be that we would go on living with the replacement that I had made and never realize that we didn't have the original. If we don't maintain a respect for the ununderstood facet of the apple, we won't continue to develop our rational faculty. I think that's another way I could put it. As long as we maintain this intuitive grasp of the apple, we're maintaining a connection to something we admit we don't understand. We're grasping it with the far reaches of our mind and not attempting to hold it within the clutches of the labels that we've created. As long as we are open to that possibility that there's so much more that I don't understand, so then we wouldn't fall into the trap of thinking that we could replicate it. We would understand that any replica we would make would be something in a certain way empty. Because the replica might have 10 attributes that are similar to the original. It might have 1,000 adjectives that could describe it in the same way that I could describe the original. But if it doesn't have that, I don't want to say infinite essence, but I think that's what it is. If it doesn't have that intuitive grasp of the unknown of the object, there's something missing. Then it's man-made. It's mechanical. It only has as much complexity as we put into it, as opposed to the original, which for all we know could be infinitely complex. Sometime in the 1800s, who was it? The dean of Princeton? Don't know exactly. Got up and said, "We know all there is to know about physics, maybe?" I think that our rational understanding of the world is becoming more humble and accepting day by day that there is a more unknown, a greater unknown to every phenomena we observe. I think this is a tremendously positive trend. Because as smart as we are, I think our true connection always has to be with one half of my mind, I know something, and with one half of my mind, I do not yet know it. I'll just end with these closing thoughts on a relationship. I think especially with a spouse, but with any friend, we quote-unquote get to know them. We learn their quirks. We learn their personality traits. But if we don't believe that there's a depth to them that's much, much deeper, that I don't understand yet, then we've replaced the person for a list of adjectives. if we don't firmly hold in our minds that there's part of the individual in front of us that is absolutely unknown to us, then we're not really talking to them. We're talking to a man-made replica of them, which we've patched together in our own minds. Thank you for listening. This has been Unkempt Thoughts. If you thought I was totally right or absolutely wrong, I'd love to hear about it. Leave a message or shoot me an email at to4w3ffl3s41729. Wait a second, that's not my email address. You'll just have to guess.